This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook. This week, we learned that Harvard University rescinded admission offers to at least 10 incoming freshmen after discovering they had posted sexually explicit and racist messages on a private Facebook chat. You can join us on air online, where this conversation is always on. Did the students have a right to post the messages, as disgusting as they were? Where is the line between free speech on college campuses and speech that is simply unacceptable? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can join us anytime at onpointradio.org. Joining me now is Boston Globe columnist Joan Vinaki, who wrote about this in a piece entitled Harvard Draws the Line on Free Speech. Joan, good to have you.
Hi, Anthony.
Also with us is Stuart Taylor Jr. He's writer and co-author of The Campus Rape Frenzy, The Attack on Due Process at America's University. Stuart Taylor, good to have you as well.
Hello, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
Before I talk to you, I just want to give a little bit of background, and this was culled from the Boston Globe this morning. At least 10 high school seniors who were admitted to Harvard had their acceptances yanked after administrators discovered offensive messages and racist images posted on a Facebook chat. The Globe reports screenshots of some of the images and messages show the students mocking sexual assault, the Holocaust, minorities, suicide, and child abuse. Joan Vinaki, I'm going to start with you. You wrote that clearly these students crossed a line, but you called Harvard's decision a little creepy. Why?
Well, I didn't call the decision creepy. I thought that the policing of the Facebook page was, I used that word to describe the policing of the Facebook page. Listen, we all tell our children not to post beer pong photos on Facebook, and I suppose that in this age, people should realize, and high school seniors should realize, that anything's up for grabs. But I do think that the important question is, where, as you've stated, what's the next line of demarcation? When do they start to say that speech is unacceptable? Does it spill over to politics and ideology and not these memes, which were clearly disgusting?
Yeah. So it's sort of a slippery slope argument that you're concerned about, that today it's essentially sending rescinding admissions to students who had clearly crossed a line. Tomorrow it could be something less dramatic.
Right. And I do think there's kind of irony in the fact that at the Harvard commencement, you have the president of Harvard giving this impassioned defense of free speech. And also, the person celebrated that day was Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook. And just all those things kind of coming together in this story, which we should give full credit to the Harvard Crimson for, since they broke it. And just, you know, just how these forces are coming together in today's culture.
Well, Joan, you mentioned Harvard President Drew Faust speaking at commencements. Let's listen to a little bit of that. Here it is.
Ensuring freedom of speech is not just about allowing speech. It is about actively creating a community where everyone can contribute and flourish. A community where argument is relished, not feared. Freedom of speech is not just freedom from censorship. It is freedom to actively join the debate as a full participant. It is about creating a context in which genuine debate can happen.
So that was Harvard President Drew Faust speaking at Harvard's commencement just a few days ago. We want to say we did reach out to Harvard University. We were told on the record that the school does not comment publicly on the admission status of individual applicants. A spokesman was quoted in the Boston Globe saying Harvard reserves the right to withdraw an admission offer for a variety of reasons, including if the student changes, engages in behavior that brings into question their honesty, maturity, or moral character. Stuart Taylor, your response to this story?
It's pretty similar, but a little different. First, I don't trust Harvard, and in particular, I don't trust Drew Faust at all to make fair judgments as to what kind of speech by a student may show bad moral character. They've shown over the years a pattern of being somewhat authoritarian and politically correct on issues like this. I can think of things that Drew Faust has done for which I would fire her along those lines if I had the power to do it. But on the other hand, it's certainly possible to imagine that some of these statements, I don't know enough about them to assess them, might have been so bad as to show really bad moral character, where if I were Harvard, I would say, well, I don't want this kid. Suppose, let me be hypothetical, suppose that a white kid had said in one of these things, if they assign me to a black roommate, I will make his wife's life miserable until he moves out. That might be a firing offense to me. On the other hand, if someone said racial preferences and admissions are unfair and pernicious, you know, that's fair argument. That's the kind of thing that Drew Faust hopefully would protect if you take seriously what she said in her speech.
Well, I think we know what from what's been reported, that there are images of students mocking sexual assault, the Holocaust, minorities, suicide, and child abuse. So this didn't sound so innocuous.
Pretty horrible stuff. But yeah. I have seen messages that seem much more benign than that just sounded. Characterized as hate speech by a lot of people on campuses. So I'd need to know before you tell me, you know, okay, we're going to deny an admissions offer to this kid for making fun of sexual assault. Well, I want to see exactly what he said before I believe that it's really a pernicious thing to say. And we don't know exactly what these students say. And frankly, I don't believe Harvard's characterization of what they said, because I don't trust Harvard or any other university these days.
Well, Joan Vinocchi, we have
even minded on this.
Yeah, I mean, let me come back to this issue that we have seen some of the screenshots. I mean,
you can actually see some of the images, and they're more like, you know, to me, like cartoon-like things, like caricatures, and they're crude, and they're not funny, and they're definitely what I would characterize as offensive. But again, I mean, what's the next line? What if somebody sets up a Facebook page that is highly critical, as I wrote in the column, just say, of Elizabeth Warren? What if they call her a fake Indian? What if they somebody sets up a Facebook page that calls for a ban on Muslims from Harvard? I mean, just, again, to agree with Stewart, I mean, what if it then crosses into the line of political discourse and Harvard decides that's not the kind of student that they want there? I guess it's within their right. I mean, they're a private institution. They make those decisions, but it raises some interesting questions.
Well, I have this question. This is a little bit of a pushback question to both of you, maybe, but I mean, we've known for a long time that universities look at social media pages of incoming students and students who apply. Had these students engaged in this behavior prior to applying to Harvard, and that was disclosed in their admissions process, it would have probably been considered disqualifying, wouldn't it have? I mean, so in that sense, this isn't really a suppression of free speech. It's like, well, wait a minute, we don't really want people like that in our community. What's wrong with that thinking, Stuart Taylor?
That's a pretty good question, and frankly, I do think the two situations are different. You know, when you're accepting, you know, some tiny percentage, what is it, 3% of all applicants, and you see something like that, you might say, well, that guy didn't make it into the 3%. But if he's already made it into the 3%, and then maybe I'd be a little more charitable. And part of the reason is, we all know that kids do outrageous things, say outrageous things, just to be outrageous, things that don't really reflect on their moral character, things that sound like they would reflect on their moral character, but if you sat the kid down and you said, did you really mean that? And, you know, he might say, no, of course not. I was just, you know, being outrageous. That happens a lot, and we have to be careful not to overreact to that, even when the speech seems worthless and even when it seems to have nothing to do with reasoned discourse.
I'd add one other thing. I think it shows that you can be smart enough to get into Harvard and then be dumb enough to do what these kids did. And also, a colleague of mine who is a Harvard alum, who should remain anonymous, said if they just waited a year and joined the Harvard Lampoon, they would have been fine.
Listeners, we're talking about Harvard University's decision to rescind admission offers to at least 10 incoming freshmen after discovering that they had posted sexually explicit and racist messages on a private Facebook chat. What do you think of Harvard's decision? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joan Vinocchi of the Boston Globe is with me. Stewart Taylor Jr., writer and co-author of The Campus Rape Frenzy, The Attack on Due Process at America's Universities. Stewart and Joan, stand by. I want to get some callers in here. Let's go to Amanda, who is calling from Glastonbury, Connecticut. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Anthony. I'm a current current college student, and I've seen these groups a lot online, and they've been getting more and more extreme and kind of pushing the envelope to prove to others that, like, you know, other students, other, you know, people online, that they're cool and they're not affected by these things. And what they're posting is getting more and more offensive and way outside the boundaries of, you know, what could be considered just kids being outrageous. And they're well aware of that, which is why they made this a private group. This wasn't something that, oh, maybe they didn't know. Like, everybody, every college student is well aware that the Holocaust is not something that you should be joking about. So I agree 100% with the Harvard's decision to rescind their admissions. I think that this is a trend that has been growing and needs to be stopped.
Amanda, thanks so much for putting that point of view on the table. Let's move on to Mike, who's calling from Lisbon, Connecticut. Mike, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call, Anthony. I'm torn in what I think about this because I do believe everyone has the right to say what they wish. I spent a long time in the military defending that right. But I also agree that Harvard has the right to say, we don't want to hear it. But the part that really tears me is Harvard is fairly well known for leaning to the left. I've heard descriptions of what they wrote, but I have not seen what they have written myself. If their comments were of a leftist lean, would they have been as heavily censored as they were for what might be described as a more conservative lean? Like I said, I don't know what their comments were. I haven't seen those comments.
Mike, I got it. It's a good question. I mean, we'll say again that, and Joan and Stuart disagree with me, but what we understand about these comments and what we've seen is they didn't really seem to lean left or right. They just leaned really far or past the line of what's appropriate discourse. But Joan, respond to the caller.
Well, first, I'll agree with you. I mean, I don't think there was a political bent to what they did. It was tasteless and ugly. For example, one calls the hypothetical hanging of a Mexican child piñata time. I mean, that's not funny. That's obnoxious. That's gross. That's ugly. So I don't think in this case there was really a political reason for them. I think they just looked at it and said, kind of that old description of pornography, you know it when you see it. This was just ugly stuff. And they do have the absolute right to say, that's not who we want as part of our community. Again, it's just like, what's the next question? Is the next line about ideology?
Right. Let's go to Brandon, who's calling from Arlington, Massachusetts. Brandon, you're on the air.
Hi, Anthony. So I just want to be clear that I'm not condoning the comments in any way. I think they're completely inappropriate. The point I did want to make, however, is that I know Harvard does have the choice, but the question is, where does it come that Harvard and other universities have a responsibility? That these students obviously lacked a certain skill, right? Academically, they're obviously very far along, but socially and emotionally, they engaged in these conversations, and they did it for a reason. And it becomes the point of our most well-funded institution in our country that what is their obligation to accept these students, knowing that they have a lot of work to do in terms of how they present themselves. And that's really the question that I have. And I know it's not a public university, but that's the question that I have maybe for the panel, is what obligation should Harvard have to students that lack these skills and really need practice and working on them?
It's a really interesting question, Brandon. Stuart Taylor, what do you think of Brandon's question?
I think he makes a good question. I think everybody's made a good question. I think this is an area where nuance is appropriate, and I wouldn't take absolute stances. Is it so bad to joke about the Holocaust that it should rescind an admissions offer? I have a hard time contradicting that. I think it's pretty darn bad. But where you draw the line is a big question. Another thing that complicates the analysis, suppose Harvard had been a state university, suppose it had been, say, the University of Pennsylvania. Well, in that case, the students would have a constitutional right protected by the First Amendment to say outrageous things, even things that qualify as hate speech. Now, I think it's good that private universities don't have the same obligations, but it's a little bit hard to reconcile. Sorry, you're good enough for the University of Pennsylvania, but you're not good enough, I'm sorry, for Penn State, but you're not good enough for Harvard. It's a very tough case, and a lot has to do with, you know, with how much trust one has for the people making the decisions to make these tough line-calling judgments in an appropriate, fair way. And In that department, I think the universities of America have not shown they're very trustworthy.
Joan, to pick up on Brandon's call, though, what about the moral code and values that these incoming students are expected to uphold the moment they are accepted? I mean, they're part of the Harvard community, and now they're responsible for upholding the sort of moral code and values that those universities represent.
Well, I guess it's a subjective decision what you know crosses the line. They say that an application or an admission can be revoked on the basis of conduct, you know, that the honesty, maturity, and moral character are the three areas. So, but that's subjective. The university makes the call on what violates those standards. I think Alan Dershowitz had an interesting idea in his comments in the Globe today. He said, what if Harvard had called in these kids, these students, and, you know, talked to them and made them confront what they had written? That might have achieved more than just revoking. Well, it wouldn't achieve more, but it would just be a different way of handling the situation.
Yeah. Stuart Taylor, we only have about 15 seconds left, but final thought from you about how Harvard might have, I don't know, taken a different course here.
I like the idea that Alan Dershowitz had, which is rather than just make a decision based on some tweets or whatever it is, although we might want to make a decision about the President of the United States based on that, college, you know, somebody who's coming to college, let's talk to them. Let's see what they have to say. Let's see whether they really are consumed by hatred or whether they're just being outrageous. And
Stuart Taylor Jr., we got to end it there because we're up against the clock, but thank you for joining us. And Joan Vinocchi, Boston Globe columnist, thank you as well. We really appreciate it. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.